Hey guys, this is John Bokenkamp, the creator of The Blacklist and the co-writer of episode 622, Mr. Robert Diaz. I hope you like the season. You are listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
We stick a needle, or is it an ice pick, in season six? Welcome to the award-winning The Blacklist Exposed podcast. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. Welcome to our annual game of Who the Hell is Red Reddington this week? Thanks for joining us once again as we discuss number 15 on The Blacklist, former President Robert Diaz, written by the law firm of writer John & John. The season finale was directed by Bill Rowe. Plus, we will give our thoughts on season six as a whole. Show notes and other intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com. Should preface with, we already did the Instacast, which kind of covered a lot of the elements, so some of those things will probably like glide by.
I would think so. Plus, yeah. Welcome back. I'm glad you are unharmed.
Yes, I was. I was unharmed. I had a nice little jaunting trip to the mountains. It was a lot of fun. And I didn't hear all the screaming from there.
It was pretty loud on Friday night. Let's be clear.
How was the? Hey, I wasn't here, so how was that? Did people lose their mind, or were they pretty excited about the whole reveal?
I think people were excited about the reveal, but then it just made people more confused, kind of like we talked about on the Instacast. Like, is it Katerina? Is it not Katerina? Is Red still Katerina? I don't know. So
it's just Katerina. Crazy. They called it Katerina. Crazy. I mean, how many times do you need to say it, really?
We'll talk about it later.
All right, fine.
First things first, though, we'll cover off on our final profiling question of the season before we dig into your special agent intel thoughts on the season finale. And then we will give you our thoughts on the season as a whole, plus our predictions for season seven. Thanks to all of you that are supporting the show on Patreon. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/theblacklistGSM. You know what? If you love the experience of the live video after party that we did last week and want to see more of that, we just need to raise $1,000 a month in support from all of you to make that an ongoing thing. Because you know what? Video, super expensive. So help us fill the fedora this summer so we can do all of season seven via live video chat. P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/theblacklistGSM. 200 of you just need to give $5 a month, and that'll make that live show possible. FYI, that's less than the new Disney Plus service, and it's one less trip a week to the vending machine. So if you help us out, it helps you out too. Just saying.
Does that mean I have to put pants on?
You don't have to put pants on. It's still chest high.
Says you. I'll be doing this the whole thing standing up. How will POTUS kill POTUS? That is the question that the profiling question of last week. Let's see if anybody got close. Wendy Davies said if he is involved in such a plot, it would most likely be an attempted assassination to garner sympathy votes in the re-election. My theory is he thinks there's something on that thumb drive that will expose his ill dealings and that he is unaware of the real contents of that drive.
Pseudo close. He was trying to garner sympathy votes for the re-election.
Kind of.
But I think that some people that were having a challenge with this whole thing was what was on the drive, and was the wife's stuff on the drive? Was his stuff on there? Like, what was on the drive? And I think what it was enough documentation to make people fear an assassination attempt. And then
on the plot. It was all the findings on the plot. That's what it was.
But it wasn't about her findings about the drunk.
No, it wasn't her stuff. It was all about the plot.
The plots, which then would have just been him moving the sniper rifle 2 degrees to the left and taking out her instead of him.
Yeah,
that so technically wasn't on the dossier.
He did miss, really. I mean, she's not dead, so technically he did miss.
Yes, he was startled. Yeah. Startled.
It's called a kill shot, people. It's called a kill shot.
It's called a shoulder shot, is what he did.
Well, I'm saying if he didn't miss, it would have been called a kill shot.
Jen Stewart said, "I think he is aware of the end game, but he doesn't know that he is the target." Sorry, Jen. Play again next time.
Heather, I feel bad reading these now. I mean, really. Heather Patterson, he was a twin or a triplet. Aaron will be on board with this. I see what he did there, and it's not funny.
Celine Jean said...
Triggered!
Celine Jean said they will put a lookalike or he finishes his mandate in 2020. They already know who will replace him, so if it's an intended towards the future president, or maybe it's an intended towards all of the candidates.
Julie Ho will be a fake death as Diaz is in too much debt with too many criminals. The vice president is the true mastermind. He did not run for presidency because he knew he did not have the right profile. I like that one. That would have been better.
I can't believe you said that at the same time. Amy James Young said, the president is not the real president. He's a doppelganger, and a real president has been kidnapped. The doppelganger thinks it will be an attempt at his life. No one says, yes, kill me, but Anna wants to kill him, so it won't be a loose end. That almost would have been better, too.
I think so. Let's call her Headshot Anna from now on.
That'd be cool.
Nate says an assassination attempt would bring a sympathy vote for President Diaz. They're using the wag the dog play to manipulate the nation toward his re-election. Kind of.
Half right.
Sure. Yeah.
Sylvia said, the way Anna was referring to POTUS made me feel she was talking about a different person. It could be a plan to kill Diaz and replace him with an imposter from the cabal or any of the other organizations Anna might be working for.
These are all prime examples of how we get carried away with our theories. Cindy said the plot is, which is a good preparation for what's coming. Cindy says the plot is really about killing the First Lady, not POTUS. It seems obvious the First Lady has something on the president and is threatening him with it. So the plot is about FLOTUS, not POTUS. Another diversion. Cindy Mac.
Congratulations.
Good call.
Indeed. Oh, and one other thing. Philip McDermott replied to this post in the Facebook group, and he actually got more responses to his comment than the actual question itself. So I just wanted to answer Philip's question because he's like, what kind of profiling question is that? So obviously, Philip, probably not a podcast listener. Maybe he will be going forward. But we do this thing called the profiling question of the week. It's a segment on the show. So if you don't think that this is a profiling question, here's what you can do. We'll open up a new tier over at Patreon. That's patreon.com/theblacklistgsm. If you want to give $100 a month, we will let you pick every profiling question you want for the entire run of the show that you support. So if you support for September, you get to pick two questions because there'll be two podcasts in September when the show comes back. So $100 a month there, Philip, all to you.
I like snarky Troy. I like it. I'm tired of always being the one. All right, so no profiling question for next time, but we are interviewing series creator Jem Bokenkamp next week. So submit your questions to feedback@goldensparrowmedia.com. That's feedback@goldensparrowmedia.com. Tweet us at @TheBlacklistGSM or leave them as a comment on the website for this episode or at TheBlacklistExposed.com. That's going to be exciting. I'm excited to hear what old John has to not say or say
or not
confirm
say.
Or deny.
Oh my gosh, it'll be a fun interview. Now, before I steal Aaron's truck, let's wrap this season up.
All right, before we get into your thoughts on the season finale, here is a quick rundown of the songs from Robert Diaz.
The Prom was hoppin', as well as the Breakout Plans, because all of that music belongs to Sophie Tucker. She's a return favorite here on The Blacklist. First, we hear Best Friend featuring Nervo, The Cox, and Elise Wigno as Tadashi and Liz come up with the plan. Then the execution takes place to Batshit. Sometimes you actually may find this song. Yes, that's the name of the song. Batshit.
Okay.
Like Batshit Crazy.
Yeah, that's all I keep thinking. Okay. All right. I like it.
Because sometimes in other countries, you might find the song listed as That's It. I'm crazy due to censorship rules.
I like it.
I love it. During the gun battle, after a surprise rescue by Red, we hear Mascaron from Lissom. And then when President Diaz is taken down and Agnes comes home, we hear Nothing Sacred, All Things Wild from Kevin Morby. And then we wrap up with an oldie but a goodie as Katarina takes Red down. We're treated to Cream's I Feel Free. I feel free.
All right, visit the website for the playlist. Here, I got something to tell you guys. We're doing this a little different. We're going to do the characters at the end of the episode. We're going to do some special agent intel to kind of talk about the episode. How about that?
But if we call special agent intel now, does that mean it's special agent intel now, or was it always special agent intel?
I don't even know what's happening right now. My mind just blew up. But it feels like the end of this episode. Let's start with some special agent intel.
All right. Sean's up first. So we know that Reddington isn't Katarina 100% because he said Katarina, even if she is a fake, because he knows that he, Red Reddington, is not Katarina. So he kind of said what we said on the Instatake, that because he's the one that said Katarina, he is assuming he himself is not Katarina. Mm-hmm. The question is, what do you actually believe now, Aaron, after sitting on this for a few days? Do you still buy what we said on the Instatake, or have you changed your mind?
That she is Katarina?
That she is Katarina.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I take that back. Do you believe that he is not Katarina because we don't know who the woman technically is?
I don't believe it's Katarina. I don't believe he is Katarina. He is not Katarina because he is a he. That's really where I stop at. I don't need anything else. I don't need to fill a bunch of other stuff in. There's been plenty of things to debunk that in my mind, just for me personally, over the course of the series. Like I've said before, people get it's happened on Game of Thrones. It's happened with Blacklist. It happens on any show people are passionate about. You get a theory that you're committed to, that you're passionate about. It's very, very hard once you commit to one to see other lanes of traffic. You only see the road you're on. That's just something that happens. So what I believe, I never believed Red was Katarina. I always said it's kind of plausible, maybe, but I don't believe it.
Do you still think it's plausible was the question?
I never thought it was, but I definitely think it's not now.
Okay, so not now, definitely 100% dead in your eyes.
Yeah, actually, I mean, this could be Ilya. This could be, I still say it couldn't be Red Reddington because he's dead. And I think they've hammered that into the ground at this point, which leaves a lot of...
As have we.
Right? Uncle is still in play, very much still in play, especially once they reference a childhood friend, you know, so... In my mind, where I'm at now, what do I actually believe? We're dealing with three friends. These are the three best friends that anybody could have. And you have Katarina and maybe Ilya and then whoever the other friend is. And then I don't know who that is yet. Maybe it's Sea Duke. I don't know. But I am fairly certain as you can be when you don't have all the information, that we probably have not been introduced to whoever he is yet. Other than maybe some drive-by mentions, like a Sea Duke seems like a perfect example of that.
And do you believe that she is Katarina?
Yes, I do believe she is Katarina.
Why do you believe she is Katarina?
Because he called her Katarina, and she 100% made out with him.
Okay, so two quotes that came from the interviews, one from John Bokenkamp, one from John Eisendrath. So John Bokenkamp said, the specter of...
I just want to point out, these are cherry-picked. So, like, I don't have anything... I can't sit there and pull other quotes to refute these quotes. So, these are cherry-picked. So, don't think this is, like, the end-all, be-all of what's out there on the internet. Okay, go ahead.
But these are two important ones.
Cherry-picked ones.
This is what the Red Arena camp will hang their hat on, right? So...
That's what happens when the blinders are there! I can't see the road!
So, Bokenkamp said... The specter of Katarina snapping into focus is a satisfying ending to the season, I hope, because it's the introduction of the present day version of Katarina Rostova. Those key words, present day version. Mm-hmm. Red called out to Katarina, so we should take that at face value, although it is the Blacklist, so...
He does that on purpose, come on.
I know, he totally does.
Yes.
Probably because he's like, this is going to get Troy's goat for sure.
No, he likes to keep fans engaged. That is good craftsmanship. That's good marketing. That's a smart business move. Does that mean that Katarina is not red? No, it doesn't mean that. It just means that's how Bokenkamp talks. He's a good guy. He really is. But he likes this part.
John Eisendrath. He does not read the fan stuff. Like, he leaves that up to John Bokenkamp to go digging and all that other fun stuff. But Eisendrath said in an interview that Spader always says, which him and John Bokenkamp agree with, is that whoever Red really is, he is Raymond Reddington now, today. Right. Whatever identity he had in the past doesn't matter. He is Raymond Reddington. And anybody that even knew him then in the past would now know him that his real identity is Raymond Reddington now.
The important distinction to that answer is you have to point out the question that he was asked about was specifically about the why would Katarina refer to him as Raymond if he was somebody else?
Correct.
So that's the important part, because Eisendrath is much more upfront that essentially this is Katarina Rostova. Not essentially, this is Katarina Rostova, and they both later in that interview go on to say that Katarina, or imply that Katarina, is going to be a heavy focus of the next season. A formidable foe, because who else is more formidable than Katarina Rostova?
But let me put it to you this way.
Oh, boy.
So if Eisendrath is saying, and Spader is saying, that now, today, whoever this guy is, mm-hmm. is Raymond Reddington, that same logic then should technically be able to be applied to whoever this woman is now is Katarina Rostova, but opens the door to say that she might not be Katarina Rostova. From a logic, just from a pure logic standpoint.
That's not logic. That's just like, why would we look? So by that logic, then every character that hasn't been confirmed with DNA samples would not be the character that they claim to be, or that people assert themselves to be.
Which I hope
they
is both not, re- I hope that's they not both the case of the show.
They both refer to themselves. The only thing that I got from this is it's an answer to your question from, or when I asked you last week, was because she referred to him as Raymond, and you actually said pretty much this exact same answer, that's why, because that's who he is. That's who he is now.
Correct.
Could it work both ways? I guess if you're implying that they switched sexes to become each other, that's ludicrous. If you're implying that this is somebody pretending to be Katarina, I suppose it's possible, but I feel like that just seems like bad writing. I'll be honest with you. That doesn't sound like anything. It'd be very hard for me to take that seriously, because that would almost be like a serious jump in the shark moment. You've already got one character who's completely not who they say they are. Now you're going to introduce another character, a huge character in the mythology, and that person's not going to be who they say they are. That's where you start losing fans, man. People start jumping ships like Titanic.
But in season 3, you had the djinn who was not who she said she was.
Not a major mythology character. I'm talking, this would be two major mythological characters in this, or two characters in this mythology that would, you're now saying both would be pretending, and it just doesn't make any sense. It just feels like that would be too much.
Bad writing. Too much would be a jump the shark moment for you.
100% would be that, or twins is pretty much a jump the shark moment.
Yeah. Okay.
And yes, I'm not bluffing. Twins is a jump the shark moment for me. There's there's no medium. There's no middle ground there.
Yeah, twins shows up. I hope you like Rory on the after party. Yeah.
I hope you guys really enjoy Rory, because he might be filling in a lot.
And here's where I've sat with this. Okay. I love the idea. I really do. I love the idea that if she's somebody else, doesn't necessarily have to mean that she was a man previously. She could just be another she and just be playing the role of Katarina in order to keep protecting Katarina's real identity, hideout, whatever it is, right? It's another play in her grand plan.
I could get behind that a little bit. That's not so far-fetched.
And if that's the case, that's great, because then that does leave the door open for Red Arena to still happen. And all
not Red Arena. No, it's dead, dude. There's no part of me, not even an ounce of me, that is willing to listen to anything where you said it yourself, and you can't backtrack it just because you want to have more fun with this. The dude referred to someone else as who he would be. That makes zero sense logically. That is such a stretch of any kind of logic. It makes zero sense.
And zero. And at 9 o'clock Eastern Pacific, 8 o'clock Central on Friday night, I'm with you 100%. And then Eisendrath says, well, they're referring to it now in the present day version.
No, go read the whole, you're cherry picking. I read the whole interview, man. He 100% essentially does everything but say, yes, that is absolutely Katarina Rostova. Go read the interview.
Present day, face value.
I don't care. This is getting to the point where it's getting ridiculous. Accept it. When the show gives you answers, you have to be willing to accept them. Otherwise, you're not really watching the show. You're watching what you hope is your fan fiction version of the show.
Well, here's what I'll say.
This is where everybody that doesn't agree with me is going to call me snarky and write in.
They sure will. But here's what I'll say. I think that this is great, because you're going into season 7. You have all of these open questions. You think you've gotten an answer. Half the audience is like, it's black and white. What the hell's going on? The other half of the audience is like, you're not a good show watcher. You got to do da-da-da and da-da-da and da-da-da in order to like prove this out. I think it's great because it keeps the fans engaged and it keeps the show on the air. And that's the thing that I love the most about all of this. At the end of the day, I kind of wanted to just be face value for a change, and that all of the, what's the word we always use? Double negger, double entendre. What's that? What's the word? Oh my gosh.
Those both work.
Lexical ambiguity. That's the word I'm looking for.
Oh, that's way too complicated for me to say.
The show is a lexical ambiguity. And if they've used the lexical ambiguity concept throughout the entire show in order to mask that what's on screen is literally the black and white truth from start to finish, I think it's freaking brilliant, to be quite honest. It's a stroke and masterclass in writing in order to be able to conjure up so much garbage. Garbage is the wrong word.
Fans do that a lot themselves.
They do. And whether they've played off the fans or they've not played off the fans because they always know what their signposts are and they know what they're doing. I just think it's great because if it is truly what you see is on the screen and it's the simplest answer all along, I know people are going to be really upset about that at the end because that's just how fans are. But I think it's great that they're able to use the English language and the writing capability of the staff and Bokenkamp and Eisendrath and everybody else in order to play with that enough to keep the show engaging after six seasons, because not many shows can do that.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I do feel at the same time, it is time to start leveling the playing field in terms of what is a viable theory. And I do, if you really go back and rewatch like the last four or five episodes, I really feel like they've been laying the tracks to prepare you for, yes, we're going to take one or two of these theories out. We're 100% taking out Lissington, which I think has been taken out for a couple of years, but for whatever reason, you know, many people still were very devoted to that. And I get it, passionate. When you're passionate and you're passionate about a theory, I get it. I really do. But I also continue to say you have to be willing to accept the answers when they give them to you.
And I should say for the Lissington fans, Aaron's not against all of you. Aaron's saying that the show is trying to...
Yeah, I'm not against anybody. No. I'm not against anybody's theory. I really... even though sometimes it might come across, I really am not. I really don't care what the answer is. I just want to know what the answer is. I don't have a personal preference. I have no skin in this game. But I'm not going to ignore what the show says or what the show does just because it's fun. Lissington, I feel like they had a very, very pointed... direct references to parent-child relationships and how they see each other. That he very much sees her as a parental figure. She very much sees him as a father figure. A father figure. So that is very much what that relationship is, which, you know, if you aren't aware, Lissington has referenced that that Red has a romantic relationship to Liz and that they love each other in a romantic way, which I have zero problem with. It just doesn't apply to this particular relationship that I can see anyway, based on what the show has done a lot, honestly, in the last year or two. I don't see any way that that works. Katerina, they've been building up to this. They gave you the story. Yes, I know Dom's not a reliable narrator. No, all that jive. I'm still going by, if you showed it to me, it better be true. Otherwise, get Rory. So, but then at the end, they've been building up, they've been talking about the whole idea of Katerina all season. It's been very much a background figure in this season of the show. They've been building to this moment. They cast a character. Her name is Katerina Rostova, not anonymous lady. Her name is Katerina. He calls her Katerina. She calls him Raymond. They kiss. I'm sorry. There's just no way in the world Red Arena is a possibility anymore. Now, is it a matter of it's very, very hard to it's hard to kill your darlings. It's hard to admit when you you know what? I guess I didn't get that one right. Trust me, I know, man. I just had Game of Thrones happen. I was wrong so much. So excited about, but that was more of like just random possibilities that I thought would be cool. But you know, when you're passionate about a certain theory, you get attached to it. It becomes personal to you. I get that. But when the show gives you the evidence, I think you need to accept it. And when they give you answers, you need to accept them. And then just come up with, I think it's just going to help people come up with a bunch of different cool other theories, alternate theories.
And I'll warn you guys, the Red Arena camp, I was 20 minutes away from my theory for Game of Thrones being correct. and then I got laughed off the screen. So take that for what it's worth.
Yeah. Like, how's democracy working out?
Aaron was wrong, but I was like, I was literally laughed off the screen. So that's not fun. It was not a good place to be.
No, it's not. And then, you know what? It's had a good run. I mean, 6 years is a good run for any theory. And there's no shame in that. No shame in that. And I like I said, I wasn't kidding last week. You know, people, be nice to people. You know, if you didn't like their theory, what is it? It doesn't affect you in any way, shape, or form, but I get it. It's fun to argue on the internet. Just be nice about it. That's all.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll put it to bed. Right now, we believe that Red is either Ilya or somebody else. Because some people are thinking the doc guy, the best friend sitting by the water, he might be Ilya.
I actually, yeah, the more I have rewatched it, I see a resemblance both to, I mean, Spader is uncanny. His
to Gabriel Mann, yes.
Yeah. But definitely doc guy. Yeah. He looks a lot like him too. So,
and
it works.
And I think we'll talk about the doc story in just a little bit. But the big thing there is that relation. Well, here, let's take Alexandra's comments.
Okay, sure.
She said, thank you for putting out the quick thoughts. Great way to stay in the feelings for a little bit once the finale was over. We should come back to the first thing Troy discussed with Rory on the after party. The energy between Spader and the man on the bench. Is there something there, quote unquote, or is it just me? Because I think I saw something. Could they be lovers?
Sure. I don't see any problem with it being that way. I mean, he'd be rolling different ways, that's for sure. But I don't think so. I mean, I feel like that seemed like a conversation I have with my childhood buddy.
But there was that, what you would call conversation from the death row sequence when he's having the last meal about how my mom always understood me. My dad didn't understand me. I always felt like I was a different person. Like, there was all that kind of made it seem like there was some kind of gender identity issue going on in him, potentially.
No, it didn't. Only if you read it that way. It also can read that there's so many different ways it can read. It doesn't read gender identity.
It could. It's a plausible idea. But that's why I think people are reading into this, the I love you back and forth between these two guys, as maybe a relationship thing.
Either way, I'm fine with that. I don't care.
Yeah.
So be it.
So
love each other. Just don't love each other on the bench. That's public.
So the conversation between the two of them, then you go back and listen to the conversation. And I think this is the whole lexical ambiguity thing. And I think even Eisendrath talked about it in one of the articles. You can listen to that conversation, and depending on your point of view and your reference in that moment, you can hear one thing. Or if you go back and do it again, you can hear something totally different. Like, yeah, the second time I watched it, I literally said, oh, he's saying it like, I can't believe Dom told the truth. Why would he just give it up? Man, the old codger's lost his marbles. Like, what the hell is he doing? That's how I heard it the second time. The first time I heard it, I was like, Dom's a completely unreliable narrator. I can't believe he told him the story. Like, why would he spin such fabrication? Both ways are possible.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I think that's what makes the show great, is that you have no idea which way to take it.
I mean, yeah, I agree. And I don't think you should take everything at face value. I really don't. I mean, this show has proven that over and over and over again. But
I'm also going to get shirts made that say hashtag face value. Face. Because of all the imposters.
There are some things I 100% believe. Whenever they are trying to be clear, they are very clear about it. They were clear about the bones. They were clear. They've been clear about very few things, but they have been very clear about some. And I see no other way. I see no reason why you wouldn't say that about this reveal in the season finale, because it's very specific and they hit every beat. They knew people had to know they hit. So it had to be Raymond. It had to be on the street. You had to see the woman and you had to hear them both call each other by name and maybe even embrace in some way that they knew each other. All those things happen. To me, Red Arena is dead. When it comes to the guy in the dock, that's much more open. The whole Dom, the Ilya story, there are, as I've said many, many times, I don't want to just keep repeating myself, but everything Dom said, you can twist it, you can take it however you want. If you saw it, to me, that's them showing you mythology. Now, you can take certain things that you see different ways. And you can if you go rewatch it. But if you see it, that should count as canon to me. And if it doesn't, well, I got a problem with that. So, I got a serious problem with that. To me, that's bad writing. So, and that's my personal opinion. I don't believe you should ever be shown something by that's presented as an entire episode of mythology that you're supposed to invest in, and then it not be true.
So let me ask you this question. The end of season four, then, if you were to say, we're showing you this, we're putting it out there, we're giving you the answer, and they do give you the answer. Raymond Reddington is Elizabeth Keene's father.
Which is true.
But you're taking the information that you're shown on screen from the DNA test.
That's your assumption.
The astute watchers are going, well, that's a DNA test from a 30-year-old shirt. There's no way this DNA test matches the existing Raymond Reddington. Therefore, Raymond Reddington is the father. This guy is an imposter. Those are the astute watchers mm-hmm. calling that out, like myself. Because my mm-hmm. wife then was like, are you upset that he's the dad? And I'm like, he's not the dad. Like,
I don't think anybody really thought he was
the
dad. I mean,
there were a lot of people that were duped. So because of that, do you think that we should be reading this at face value?
Or which part?
The doc conversation. Should we take this as Dom was telling the truth, or should we assume deniability, plausibility?
It definitely reads both ways, right? It reads both ways. So I don't have what Dom said, I don't have confirm. I can't say for sure on that one. I don't know. It can go either way. What we saw, I'm saying you can take what happened different ways because there's a whole lot of gaps between when things happen. There's a lot of things that can happen in those spans of time. And there are certain things that you think you see that you don't see. Like you don't see who's on the operating table. You don't see the person's face as they go into the bank. There's certain things you don't see, but the things you do see, we should be taking them as canon. It's what you don't see or what you imply that isn't canon. What you personally assert.
Infer,
that's the word I'm looking for.
Much like Liz assuming parts of the story when she inserts what she thinks she knows into the narrative.
As long as it's not what we saw, then yeah, mm-hmm. I wouldn't take what Liz said as anything because she's just talking.
So I'm going to put you doing Aaron Peterson on yourself and put you on the spot.
You could try.
make a stance. Do you believe Dom's story is true? Do you believe the doc story is just them going like, oh man, I can't believe the old codger gave up the plan? Or do you want to take the stand of Dom's story is wrong, and they're just like, I can't believe he told that fabrication.
I've had a hard stance on that. I don't believe.
Are you changing your stance because of the doc conversation?
Nah, I never believed the narration completely. I thought there's a lot of room for in that narration to not be true. I'm saying everything I saw on screen should be true. Yes. Okay. But everything that Dom said, you know, as a narrator or over the top of it, doesn't necessarily need to be true. It could be, but it doesn't need to be. That can be moved around. It can be reshuffled. What I saw better be mythology, or I'm, as a fan, insulted, personally insulted.
So I'm going to take the stance of...
That's being honest. That's being honest.
Sure, sure. And I think I'm going to take the stance of... I think he was saying it as, I can't believe the old codger actually told her the whole story and gave up the whole truth. That's where I'm standing right now after watching it a second time.
Really? I'm actually kind of surprised by that.
Because I just feel like I'm going to get a sledgehammer over my head in 22 episodes. It'd be like, Troy, why didn't you just stick with it? You were right the whole time or something. It's like, but for, I just, at this point, I'm like, there's just so much about this season that I'm not thrilled about that I have to take it at face value at this point. It's six seasons in. They got to be ramping it up. They got to be trying to land the plane, whatever, you know, they can't go on forever. If the original plan was 7 or 10 seasons, I think were the two options. Mm-hmm. Like I got to be thinking like, this has got to be an answer in order for like the real stuff to come out next season. So I'm going to take it at face value and say Dom's story was true. This is Ilya. Because for me, in order for this to work, which
person is Ilya?
If Katarina is Katarina, uh-huh. both past and present, so we can just be very clear, it's Katarina. Then okay. The only way the rest of the show works for me is that Red is Ilya. Kate May doesn't work.
Like it can work otherwise.
The whole
I can already see it.
You were the one that was like, Ilya is absolutely a Kate May, and like. Throwing it down my
throat.
That's not what I said. You said Red as Ilya would work.
It does work. Yes, it absolutely works. But you also, if hypothesize with me.
Sure.
Based on what you see, not by what anyone has said, based on what you see, well, I guess Red and Doc Guy's conversation, so it's what somebody said. But since they were private and having a private moment, I have no reason to doubt their conversation. We can assume, because based on the backstory we saw, Ilya or whoever that the actual name is, Ilya and Katerina were friends when they were kids. This could be a third person that was friends, and that could be the person that went ahead and did the surgery. Or could, you know, Red, whoever he is the friend, but Dom gave him Ilya's name in the story. That's the only like change, like that's so the events happened, just Ilya is somebody else.
Or
I mean, those are just some options. I hope that's not the case, because then it just gets too confusing.
Or like you had mentioned earlier, the friend is Ilya. And because we have seen on screen that Ilya and Katerina were friends at 6 years old, then the Red Arena people have something to hold their hat on again.
No, they don't, man. They seriously, I'm not trying to be curt, but at some point you just got to accept it. It's not a thing. It didn't happen. He called her Katerina. Unless he's having a serious identity crisis right there on the street, he 100% cannot be Katerina. Cannot be. There's you have way more evidence to suggest otherwise than you do to suggest that it's true. And especially now you have confirmation, and it's just a matter of if you accept it or if you don't. Now, if you don't, that's your choice. Believe what you want to believe. But I'm just saying, for me personally, no chance. Zero chance.
All right. Yeah, I'm with Katerina is Katerina is Katerina, and Red is Ilya. That's where I'm at going into season 7.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens with that.
But what about the whole situation where they were standing there? Now, we'll have to ask John the question, because I've heard ice pick. I've heard it was a needle.
That was a
really big needle, though.
You see it clearly. It's a needle. It's a hypodermic needle.
Yeah.
It's a needle.
I don't know why you need such a big needle to stab someone in the gut, but okay. Kathy wanted to know. Was it Kathy?
Yeah.
Kathy wanted to know. She asked if they're watching, and he said, "You're not safe." So I'm wondering if the doc guy, the friend, was actually working with Katerina, and this whole thing was a setup, because he found her super fast.
Well, there are two big things there. One, he found her super fast. And two, she had a needle and a backup crew waiting. So yes, definitely a setup. If doc guy knew about it, that's debatable, because maybe that's how he found the information so quickly, is because she set him up. That's what I would say.
All right. D.D. Elliott, as always, an amazing season finale. Great episode all around. Are questions really answered? Does Katerina truly live? Ever since Red said Katerina disappeared, I always thought she was alive, so I do hope this is true. Too bad we have to wait till the fall to get more answers. Can't wait.
All right, Nathan, the season finale was a lot of fun, but overall this episode turned the show into a convoluted mess. I mean, I could see that. I don't personally feel that, but I can see that. From Liz wanting the truth to being okay with being oblivious. Oh, the season. Is he talking about the season as a whole then?
I think so.
Okay. From Liz wanting the truth to being okay with being oblivious for the sake of love, or the conspiracy that turned into stupid villain, or creating huge series plot holes, or a Reddington that is sick one moment but never addressed again, or Reddington being so sloppy to let someone stab him with a needle like that. The show has jumped the shark so bad that I don't care anymore. This episode has turned me off for season 7. Wow.
Wow.
How do you feel about that one, Troy?
That is harsh. I felt a lot of the same feelings that Nathan is feeling. Like, I feel the Liz character was betrayed this season a little bit. I feel the conspiracy was kind of a letdown. But the Katerina being in the story, like, salvages all of that, because that's what I've always wanted, was Katerina in the show. So I'm watching season 7 for Katerina. And just saying, yep, that was all just, you know, stuff that we have to do because we have 22 episodes and you got to fill time.
I agree with the Liz thing. We're going to talk about Liz in a little bit, but I don't think it's any surprise that I do agree on that respect. I don't know if I consider it sloppy that Reddington was being sloppy. Is he saw the woman that he's talked about many times about being in love with, and, you know, she kissed him and he let his guard down for a second. You know, anybody that's ever been in love has been there, so I get that. I wouldn't call it sloppy. It's more of a moment of weakness.
Which everybody has.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Monica Stolfa said, holy moly, where to start? Sayonara, Red Arena. Hello, Katarina. I love the episodes when the entire team is working together. I hope to see more of that next season. And I like this entire season because, one, they finally gave Wrestler more to do.
Agreed.
Two, it covered more of the mythology.
I kind of agree.
Three, I'll miss Samar, but I hope they leave the team alone. I think they work fine as it is. Don't add anybody new in.
I hard stop right there. 100% agree, because I know that's probably going to come up. You know, they always get tempted to add people when one leaves. I would rather have, like, you had the random girl working in the post office. I would rather have little drop-in characters like that, where agreed. You see them for a couple episodes and, you know.
Yep. Number four, both Spader and Amir knocked it out of the park with their characters throughout the season. Five, Cooper showed what a badass he was by not giving a damn what politicians think. Six, yeah. I'm glad Dembe is back because Red needs Dembe, even more so now. And seven, Wrestler and Liz working together was awesome. And last but not least, Katarina is alive and not to be trifled with. What is she going to do with Liz? Come on, next season.
They pretty much agree with almost everything there.
Yeah.
Woohoo.
We'll dig into that a little bit more in just a bit.
Ellen Purdy, I wish they had aged up Lada as well, as that would have ended the Red Arena theory for me once and for all and allowed me to move on. Instead, they hired entirely a different actress who we can only assume is Katarina after surgery, which left things ambiguous yet again. I'm sick of all the ambiguity. I need at least some definitive answers. I mean, I get where you're coming from, but it is really expensive to do that with makeup. And, you know, not every show is Game of Thrones. So, yeah, I don't have a problem with that. It's a 30-year difference. That can cause a lot of, that's a lot of makeup.
Yeah.
And I know This Is Us, I think, does it. But This Is Us, if I'm not mistaken, I don't really watch it religiously. But does it for like a scene or two, maybe, every episode or a couple episodes or something. This would be whenever Katarina was on screen. I think that just seems more of a, God, that looks fake, than anything. I mean, after a while, it starts to, you know, hey, we know that Lada, is it Lada? Did I say it right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We know who Lada is. We've seen her in many episodes. So we would be noticing that, I feel like, if it's every episode.
Yeah. And that's what Dean actually said. Some actors say it's actually very uncomfortable. And if they need Lada for like one quick scene, that's easy. But if she had to wear that makeup all the time, that might be more of a challenge.
Yeah. So that seems more of a behind the scenes issue. Not so much a, I mean, we'll ask John and see if he'll answer.
Yeah. He'll probably dance like he always does. Annalise said, I accepted the season 4 finale and I got burned when it comes to the show. I'm not accepting anything again at, you guessed it, face value.
Oh, gosh.
Totally getting a hashtag shirt made.
That's like his favorite phrase, though. Because sometimes you know, face value is proven true. So it's not like it's never proven true.
True.
True. Stella, okay, one thing I do understand is that all of us are huge fans and followers of The Blacklist. Agreed, Stella. Stella! My desire is that all agree that we can agree to disagree and play nice with our comments. Let's be kind to each other. It might be the only glimpse of kindness someone will see all day. I love that.
We need to get her as like the sheriff in the group.
She just comes in, doors, saloon doors swinging behind her.
Everybody done now.
Yeah, great point. And I have seen less of it than I saw when the Ilya episode dropped, because that was pretty heightened. But definitely, it's still out there. And there's a whole lot of I told you so's and that kind of stuff. And
I also think there's a level of, it's hard to tell when you're writing stuff on the internet. You're writing and you can't see the emotion. You can't hear voice inflection. So there's a two-way street there. There's the, should I write this because it might inflame somebody else? Maybe I could reword it possibly. There's also the, I'm reading this because it's from my point of view, and I don't know what the point of view of the writer was, so I'm interjecting my own personal feelings into what I'm reading. So I think there's a catch-22 there on any of this stuff that you have to take it with a grain of salt and just move on. It's just a funny comment on the internet.
Hey, you know what? When people, and the passion also runs in how you read things too, because sometimes people do read them more, because, you know, I write sarcasm That's just how I write.
You live like, I sarcastically. Think let's be clear.
That's who I am. I mean, that's just how I write. That's how I speak. That's just who I am. So that's just how I talk. I'm not going to say never. Sometimes I mean something personal, but you'll know when it's personal. But I rarely ever mean anything personal by anything I do or say, especially even to Troy. It's just, you know, just a matter of how I type. So I get some people are just typing a certain way, but if you are very passionate, boy, you read it. You read it fast and you read it stern. That's part of the problem too.
Yep, it totally is. And I was a president of the Writer Reader Fan Club, probably still am, because now I have stuff from the writers that tells me I don't have to give up my theory completely. So I'm swinging back to like 80-20 now.
God.
Versus 99-1, like it was after the episode aired. But at the same time, I'm not going out to like pitchforks and torches like, oh my gosh, they like yelled at me because I'm a Red Arena person. I don't care. I don't know you personally. I don't know you face to face. It's like, go ahead. It's fine. You can say what you want. If it makes you feel better to pick on me and make me feel and put me down and put the theory down, if that makes your day better, great.
What if they yell at me when I'm picking on you? That's what I don't get. Like, hey, mind your business. He can tell me. He's a big boy. He can stick up for himself.
Except for whatever that was, Phil McDermott. Yeah, that's a different story.
That was full on snark alert. All right, you want to talk
about
some?
Got more comments than the question itself. It was like, I don't know, like 20 people answered the question and he got like 32 comments.
Maybe you should have had a better profiling question. What? Oh,
was it a profiling question? I wasn't sure.
Obviously wasn't. It's not what profiling means.
All right, final thoughts. Robert Diaz, number 15. Good finale.
Overall, good finale, fun episode. Man, I love these people. I love everybody involved with the show. I think they do a great job. Why they had to kill the vice president or the president's wife, why they had to kill FLOTUS just didn't work for me. That part didn't work at all. And I feel like it could have and probably should have been. Unless, I don't like the Monday morning quarterback ideas, though, because the episode plays, the episode works, the finale works. I feel like that was kind of, maybe it wasn't good enough for this show. How's that?
There you go.
Like, I feel like the idea could have been stronger based on the other ideas we've seen floating around in this show. It felt less the Blacklist. Then I would have. It felt more like NCIS or something than Blacklist.
And I was pretty negative about it. On the quick take, it was still kind of during the after party. I've played it back in my mind. I can see how the FLOTUS thing works. I can see how the setup works, and it all makes sense. And it's okay. But I think that's just it. I think it's when you have things like the Cabal, and you have foreign national powers, and you have let's bomb the UN so we can make it look like it's an even bigger attack than it really is all the way back at the start of the season. When you're looking at it from a season arc perspective, I'm still kind of like, yeah, it's a little flat.
When you have, and I think part of this is expectations, because we had expectations. Absolutely. And they went a different way. So, I mean, it falls in line with you can't be mad. What is the adage? A writer's job is not to show you what you want is not to give you what you want. It's to show you what you didn't know you wanted.
Right.
So, you know, and that is very often true in the Blacklist. I've wanted a lot of things and they show me something cooler. This isn't one of those times. And it's just not, I just feel when you have a show that has so many government conspiracies and a lot of cool different asides and things like that, this is where I felt the episode and therefore the last half of the season kind of struggled. So yeah, I thought it was okay. And the Robert Diaz part, the episode I thought was great finale.
Yeah.
Like I enjoyed it through and through, just that one plot point.
Yeah. And I think that was a general consensus from everything I read online was that it was like the Diaz thing kind of like, for a character that we knew back in season 3.
Right.
Right. We met him in season 3, then he shows up again in season 4. So it's not like this is like a trivial character. He's been in the mythology of the show for quite a while. So to see him come back up again, you're like, oh, this must be something really big because they're bringing this guy back. You know, he's tied to Kirk. Kirk's going to show back up. And everybody gets all spun up because of all that stuff. And then it's like, oh, he just wanted to kill his wife? Really?
Yeah. And a lot of it can be expectations because, you know, you got to remember, like, 24 is one of my top 5 TV shows of all time. And season 5 is the best season of that show.
By a mile.
Which is the president season. So when you're saying there's a conspiracy involving the president, in my mind, you better come up here. Get my hands way up at the top. because that's where I got to have it. And it just, it wasn't the same kind of plot. Yeah. That's all.
All right. Well, let's move into our season character wrap up, and we'll start off with former president Robert Diaz. We just mentioned he's been part of the series since season 3. Technically, he's going to jail. He's not dead. So do we see him again? Do you want to see him again?
Not really. I feel like that story's run its course. I think it was really cool that what was the line where how does a criminal bring down a president?
With pleasure.
Yeah, with pleasure. How does Reddington bring down a president with pleasure? That was great. I love that. But I don't need to see him again. I don't know about you.
No, I think Diaz's storyline is done. I think if Diaz had some way to bring Kirk back in, Konstantin Rostov into the show, or Konstantin Rostov is technically how you would say it. I think if there's a way to bring Kirk back in with Diaz, I think that would be okay to see him again. But if Kirk's not involved, then I don't need to see him again.
I would like to see Kirk back, though, since you bring him up.
Yeah. I think that the mystery of why he just disappeared on thin air, I think that's part of it. Especially if Katerina's back, then you would think Kirk would be like, hey, that's my wife.
Feels like a reason why he wouldn't kill Red, right?
Still does.
Katerina's still alive.
That is one of the things we said he would say. That's one of the three.
I agree. I know, because I was there. That's what we said. All right, bullet in the head, Anna McMahon. She's not present all season, but we were introduced to her very early on. What do you think of the attack on the UN was about at the start of the season?
Yeah, the only thing I could think of there was that introducing her early on with the Turkish ambassador, Red, doing the whole UN thing. I think that was to put somebody on the idea that, hey, there's terrorists and they're attacking our country. And it was probably part of like step one of the plan. That's the only thing I can come up with, because otherwise there's no reason to bomb the Turkish ambassador and the rest of the show. So I think it was a way to set up the plot that was on the dossier in order to make it seem like a more credible threat.
Okay. Now this is where, cause it's, you know, we're 22 episodes in. So I'm trying to remember. And I think that was like what, second episode?
Yep. Number two.
Yep. Number two. And you're Mr. Encyclopedia. I get it more when I go back and rewatch. So that was part of the president's conspiracy as well, correct?
That's what I'm thinking, is that You have to basically say, hey, look, someone's trying to bomb the UN, whoever this terrorist group is, and if they were still blaming the Third Estate at the time.
Right, Third Estate, because that was originally the plan until Red screwed it up.
Exactly. So if the Third Estate is bombing the UN, the Third Estate is now, ooh, credible, you know, bad people. So when the plan comes out to assassinate the president and then actually end up killing FLOTUS, then they can say, look, This is legitimate threats. I can't believe this happened. What a sad day for our country. I'm glad the president's alive. Re-elect Diaz 2020.
I'm pretty sure, like, I'll be honest, that this feels like a very intricate plot, and that really you could have just taken a shot at the president, missed at the first lady. It didn't matter who it was. We don't have to blame anybody. We'll just be like, oh, man, I can't believe they missed.
Yeah, that's where I think it all kind of fell apart, because it's like, if it's really just about the first lady, you didn't need to be so elaborate.
Yeah, that was a little
Germany
little
didn't
extreme.
Need to investigate. MI6 didn't need to get involved.
So did you like her as the big bad? I mean, I know the president was the ultimate one, but she was really our main foe for the last half of the season.
Yeah, I mean, she was great. I think where she became a really good bad guy was when she planted the Third Estate file and threw them off the path. Mm-hmm. And like, oh man, this wasn't anything at all. It was just a bunch of kids. And it's like, now I got them right where I want them. Like, I think that gave her the snively whiplash mustache twirl at that moment. And then coming into the end, I think she was great. I think it was really, really, I don't think she was director level bad, but she was probably Berlin level bad.
The reason why I think her performance was great, just solid across the board. Unlike Diaz, who was kind of, you know, he didn't really do any, he didn't really get anything flashy. She got a lot to play with, and she has that ability to convey humanity. There are several moments where she looked absolutely afraid of the situation that was happening, but she stayed the course, you know, so she was human. And for me, a great villain has humanity, and she had that a little bit. So I thought she was great. I really like, she's probably my favorite villain or big bad since Kaplan, honestly.
And I still don't count Kaplan as a big bad.
Well, she was a big bad. By the way, saw her this weekend, John Wick 3.
John Wick 3. I was like, Susan Blumhardt! I yelled it out in the theater.
She's working at the library when John Wick goes and gets that book and does damage with books.
That was amazing. Like, so good. So good. We'll have to dig up her email and send her a, hey, I saw you in the movie. Samar, sad to see her go. Was the departure earned, do you think? Or would you rather just had Samar die off after the bear attack last season?
Oh, no. Look, I hope no. And the reason why is because that would have been too... She lived, okay. She dies, it's cheesy. You know what I mean? So I would not have liked that. Plus, I don't want the character to die off. I want Aram to have a happy ending potential. And but that's what he currently has.
She doesn't die off, but yet she says yes to the ring. That's not cheesy?
Well, I mean, she forgot about it. So... It's probably cheesy, but you know, you're rooting for both of them, so it works and you want that relationship to work because they're so yin and yang, and you really, honestly, I'll be perfectly honest with you, of all the relationship in the show, you know, I've said many, many times, I never liked Tom and Liz. I never bought them as a couple, not once. I did buy Aram and Samar, so that was my happy relationship between Red and Dembe and Aram and Samar. Those are my happy relationships in the show. So yeah, I definitely am still rooting for them.
And you lost both this season temporarily.
Yeah, but honestly, with so many characters, Samara wasn't getting much to do. So if you're not going to do much with her, then free it up. And that's one more reason why you don't add anybody else, because we finally get some stuff with Russer. We get some stuff, you know, the thing, there's more than enough to go around now. And if you add one more person full time, that takes away from going around.
Sure does. Sure does. Yeah. If nothing else, I'm going to miss the she forgot jokes from the podcast. that was fun for half the season.
I already forgot most of them.
So bad. But yeah, I think it was good because if nothing else, it brings their relationship together at the end of last season to the point of, you know, they first met in a hospital bed. They first touched hands in a hospital bed, so then to get engaged in a hospital bed, I think that was a really good arc to compare those two together for the parallelism perspective. So to have her come into the season because of that, I think that works. And then just the whole concept of introducing the Osterman Umbrella Company as someone that could be chasing Katarina, and now they're chasing after Samar for the rest of her life. I think that's a great way to tie mythology into an exit in the show. So I think as little that Samar probably had this season, I think that the way her character arc wrapped up, I think did a really great service to the show in general and a great service to the character. I think she played it to the full, to the end. So I dug it.
Yeah. It was a nice send off. And if she comes back, then you will have a pretty, pretty sweet send off. What about Aram?
Aram, man, that whole first half of the season, I just felt like he was put on the back burner a little bit.
Agreed.
And I don't know if that was because there just wasn't much for him to do field work wise, but you would assume with the field training and the acceleration from the coma from mid season 5, that you would see Aram doing more things. So to have him be in the background, I don't know. That was kind of like, you know, but when he got his moment to shine, right, when he literally swindled Red for $60 million. Awesome. Like, super great. Like, that. Like, that's the Aram that we love and the Aram we like to see, especially when it's an Aram and Red relationship episode. I think there needs to be more of that. I think we've seen a little bit of the Red and Donald wrestler relationship this season. I'd like to see more Red and Aram relationship in season 7. I think those two are fun together. Ever since that first time they were sitting across from each other in season 1, disassembling the gun, tracing the bank routing numbers.
Well, I've said this for years, and, you know, go back and listen to the shows. Aram is the heart of the show at this point, and I still say that. Whenever you have Aram get more involved, I don't want to take away from anything, because I do think there's some writing struggles with Liz, the character, and you know, we'll talk about that in a second. Not anything to do with performance, it's writing. When they give him the opportunity, and he's a factor in the episode, there's more emotional punch to me. And it's proven that over several years. Now, everybody has a little bit of that extra something, but with Aram, it seems to work every time. He just has a good personality to bring that out in people, which means I would say he should be more prominent in the episode. I think Dembe should be more prominent too.
Yeah, flash drive in the toilet, the girl in the Faraday cage, Samara send-off and then going after her.
It's the humanity thing.
Yeah,
he's the most genuine person and down-to-earth person in the whole task force. So therefore, he's the most relatable. Therefore, we can have the most attachment to him.
And then with him being Mel, the student in the finale, I think that his character arc overall this season, I think, was good. It just started off a little slow.
He didn't get much more to do in the second half either. He just like had that middle arc where he was really busy, and then he was back to tech guy.
Well, is that because Wrestler and Liz being back together as partners, does that add a little bit of heart to the show? Because that's kind of the first half of season one, because Aram wasn't really prominent until Ansel Garrick.
Yes. I feel like those things definitely are a factor. And just, and also the story that they were telling as a whole. You know, you had Red in jail a lot. You had a lot of those other factors going on. So you've got a lot more pieces in motion. So that was a factor for a lot of people too.
Sure. What about Cooper? You think you loved his being able to stay within the law this season? Because he was a little outside the law in season five, but he was within the law, but yet super snarky. So I'm sure he was like your blood brother this season.
Well, and I think we talked about this before when we met Harry Lennox at C2E2. Of all the characters, I mean, even though Amir is very close to Aram, but he's also kind of a little bit looser and more readily funny than his character. Harry Lennox is Harold Cooper. Like, that is the guy. So I, it's hard for me now that I've kind of met him to watch him and not go, yeah, I love that. Because I think that's that's exactly what he would do in that situation. So it just feels like the same. Yes, I've loved it because it seems like that's who the dude is. That's who that guy is. Like, he's that guy. I want him in charge of all government facilities.
Hey, Harry Lennox, 2020. Write him in.
I'd be there. I'd vote. Write him in. Yeah, people win with that. I do feel like Cooper didn't get a lot to do this season until like the latter half. That part, I feel like he was shortchanged a little bit.
But everything he did in the latter half, I think, was amazing.
It's great. Yeah, I thought it was great.
The quippy lines to Red, quippy lines to Anna, quippy lines to the president. I mean, all of that was just fun. It's like, with pleasure. I mean, that was like a perfect button on that second half. That was amazing. Absolutely loved it.
He was a lot of fun, and he just did not care. He gave zero Fs, as they say in the street. So, he gave zero Fs.
What about Wrestler?
You know, I would make the case this is the best season for him. Definitely the best season in the last several. Because he just, for the last several, he's felt very relegated to the background. And here he finally got something more to do with learning about Liz's, about Raymond's secret. And then the whole full culmination of that at the end where he has a conversation with Raymond, with Ray and or Red, whatever you want to call him this week, and say, you know, and he basically, hey, that will stay with me. So they did have that conversation for a while. I didn't think they would have it. But I do feel like the season where his fiance died.
Season one. She just died in season one, right?
I think she did die in the first season. Yeah, I'm trying to remember. But I feel like that's still his strongest, but this was very close. What about you?
Yeah, I thought this was a good return to season one, especially him and Liz working together. I would have loved to have gotten just a little bit more of that conversation between him and Red in the final episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just a little bit more, like, a reminder for the audience, you know, that might have just been checking out the finale, which, you know, finale had great ratings. The live ratings were amazing, highest of the season. So there would have been new people just maybe checking in, or old people that are like, well, they're going to do the big reveal tonight. Maybe I'll check in and see if they actually give me any answers. Maybe I'll go back and watch on Netflix in the off season. That they would have gone back to some of that, like, hey, you know, I chased you for 5 years and, you know, I've put you to the screws. And I said, we shouldn't be working with you because we shouldn't be supporting criminals killing people. But every time I've needed you, you've always been there. So because of that, and because you helped save me from my dark period after I killed Hutchins, and because you saved me from my dark period of my pills addiction, and because, that's why this is going to stay with me. I think that just would have added a little bit more to that sequence.
I like that. Yeah.
So
that works. I just feel like it was a return to form. He needs to get more to do. I really, really have enjoyed him and Liz getting back together and being partners again. I don't need the relationship. I wouldn't mind, like, at the very last episode, they go on a date or something. but I really just like them as partners. They've always reminded me as a great Mulder and Scully. They're good as friends. They play off each other well. Would buy a romance with them way more than I ever would with Tom, but I don't need that. So just, I've just enjoyed that aspect coming back to the fork and actually having more to say to her than just you go first, you know, or take the shot or whatever.
Yeah. Even the fun part in the library when he's Wrestler's carrying all the books and Robert Vesco, like yeah. that whole sequence is fun. It's just fun seeing them work together.
That's great.
So
the hard one, Liz.
Megan, if you're listening still, we love you. We think you did great this year.
It has nothing to do with performance. Her performance was great.
Amazing.
She nailed everything she needed to nail.
Yeah.
This is hard. It's hard when you're fans of the show because, you know, we can't lie about it. Look, I'll be blunt. The first half, the writing for Liz was poor. Flat out poor.
Well, the writing was fine. The decision to make the turn to the love angle was the wrong decision.
I don't think that was the wrong decision. I just don't think it was a harsher turn than
certain turns that we've seen on other shows.
Certain turns that we've seen on other shows, Game of Thrones. It was a very, very sharp turn. You can't build a character up to only care about this one answer and then she just gives it up, like basically at the drop of a hat. I don't feel it was earned. It wasn't built into that. So it really caused some
consternation,
problems with the character. Yeah, some shortchanging with the character. Yes. And the bigger problem with that first half is they built it up to be this we're searching for answers session that they never really started searching for answers. They kind of looked for a nurse, and that's really about it.
In a house.
Okay. In a house, yeah. I just feel like it was a whole lot of hubbub about nothing. And that's where the writing, those plot points, no, I wouldn't say the writing, because the episodes themselves were fine. Were fine and enjoyable. But Liz's character, the writing for her character, didn't make sense with what was proposed.
Especially when you're hinging your entire season, coming off of season 5, on, I'm going to destroy him.
Yes.
And I got this partner that's going to help me in my sister, who also wants to destroy him. And it's like, okay, destruction, ready, season 6. And it's like, well, you know, I'm kind of having feelings for the guy, and I'm really sad that I put him in jail.
It just didn't work. I don't think on many levels that didn't work.
Nope.
On many levels, it did not work. Yeah.
Second half, though.
Much better. Much better. She started asking questions. See, that was the biggest, and we talked about it in the podcast, but it's been a long time. Maybe people forgot. She never asked any questions that were relatable to what was going on when they should have been asked. Absolutely. You know, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but it becomes infuriating when you love a show and people don't ask sensible questions. Not big questions, sensible questions.
Not the full answers, just something that would lead to an answer.
Yes, I don't even answer it. Just say, nah, I'm not going to, or whatever you need to say. There's ways to play that off. You know, that's what you do. That's part of the writing process. That's what you do. You find a good out.
They've done it before. It's my secret, and I don't have to tell you.
Thank you. But you have to have them ask the questions or your character starts to look like a dope, and you don't want that. Second half, she was asking the questions much better. Everything worked much better simply because that directive or that goal changed. And it might've been because they were listening to fans. I have no idea.
So speaking of listening to fans, Agnes coming home.
I don't need it.
They said in the interviews that it's not because of the fans, that they just felt that it was the right time to do it.
I believe that.
Do you think that she had actually spent time with Agnes while she was in Scotty's care? Because the way Agnes came in, it seemed more like a mommy, so good to see you. Like I haven't not seen you for the last 2 years. Like she's been checking in on Agnes and spending time with her at Scotty's house, potentially here and there.
Oh,
it's how I felt like the welcome home was. Like it was more of a mommy, I'm so glad to see you, versus like, mommy, I'm so glad I haven't seen you in like 3.5 years or whatever it was. It just seemed like it was more like she was anticipating it. I don't know. It could just be child actor. It could just be child actors too.
Yeah, I didn't get any of that, but I also wasn't really that worried about it one way or the other. I mean, it's just one of those plot points where I get why they made the decision, and I'm totally fine with it because I didn't need Agnes in my Blacklist show, you know. So I totally got it. I was completely fine with it.
For her profiling, we talked about this with Megan when we did the interview back in season four, right? But her profiling is her superpower. Mm-hmm. Do you think that she needs that superpower back again in season seven?
Yes.
Do more bad guy assessment.
The characters come too far, and then I think that was a big that was also a big problem with the whole she just swallowed up and I'm just gonna love you because that's, you know, at least you've always been there kind of thing. It's like, because she's a profiler. Her whole main drive has been to understand the people she's dealing with. That's what profiling is. That is you're understanding your subject, your prey, your suspect, whatever. And she wanted to know now if she understands that. Okay, well, it wasn't presented that way. And it wasn't presented well that way, in my opinion. So, yes, definitely we need to get that back because she's come too far as a character. It feels like a regression if you don't.
Because let's recap where she's been. You killed a high-ranking U.S. official.
Mm-hmm.
You locked up your husband in a boat. You literally faked your own death. Were kidnapped by your supposed father and had to, like, crash a plane and try to swim to safety in order to save your own life. And then your husband gets killed. All because of this guy, and yet you're like, eh, whatever.
Exactly.
I think that, like, five seasons of buildup for the I'm going to destroy him moment to not have a destruction is challenging.
Or to settle for no answers. No real answers. To settle for that. That was a struggle. That was a struggle. But, I mean, we're through it. We're out on the other side. But yes, to answer your question, profiler, I would like for that to come back.
Yeah. All right, Red, 60 years old. Does he still got it?
Sure does.
Anything about the season where you felt like, Red was kind of flat at that point? Or do you think the prison scenes were great? The courtroom scenes were great?
I love the courtroom scenes. Yeah. I do feel like court... It didn't for me, but I know for most fans, it probably went on too long. Not for me. I enjoyed the hell out of that stuff. I really like that stuff. But no, I mean, Red is Red. Red is always a good time. There was actually a couple episodes where I felt like he was much more in the background. It might have been the Aram ones. But outside of that, no. I mean, Spader always, you know, they give the choice writing to the guy that chooses that scenery, man.
What about the pharmacist needing the drugs and then he starts taking the drugs, but yet we don't see anything about it. Like, is that part of this Townsend initiative that we heard Dembe talk about at the, in the finale?
What do you feel? And we didn't talk about Dembe, so we're going to have to talk about him.
Oh, that's true.
Maybe because he left, he forgot he came back. What did you think about that? Because that is something we don't have an answer for yet. And we probably won't. I don't think they forgot about it. I don't think it's like Russell's addiction where it never comes up again. I do feel like this is something that's going to come back up. I just don't know in what aspect. Now, I think it's more of a, he has an illness is what I think.
Yeah, it could be something as simple as that, or maybe exposure, you know, if he is Russian, because I think that we're assuming now he's
Chernobyl.
Maybe I'm assuming he's Russian. He hung out with Rocco Zamani. He's hung out with Ruslan Denisov, all that had nuclear issues. Maybe he's got some form of radiation poisoning and he's been having meds that just aren't working anymore. So he needs some med to help him with radiation poisoning or something.
I like that.
And maybe the Townsend Initiative is tied into that, or maybe the Townsend Initiative is something totally different and we'll learn what the Townsend Initiative is next season.
Yeah, I don't feel like that was that's not a drop plot point. I think a lot of people feel that way. I don't think that.
Oh, it's because Katarina's now on the scene. So they're like, oh, hormone injections. Darn.
No, they were saying that long ago. And I come. That.
I just want to get your go again, that's all.
Woosa.
Dembe.
Woosa. Yes, Dembe is back. We should get more excited. Dembe is back. Did anybody really think he was gone? Come on.
No.
I mean, I will concur. I rewatched the episode because you pointed out on the Instant podcast that, wow, where did he come from? I rewatched him like, wow, where did he come from when he saved them? Because everyone in the world should have seen his ass coming about a mile away.
Yeah, because it's not like he was in a car.
It was pretty good.
Did he parachute in?
Yeah, that was a battle of the bastards there. I was like out of left field. Like, where did this dude come from? Thank God he's here. But how did nobody saw this guy show up? Nobody, not a single person. If I was on the opposing team, I'd be like, nobody saw this coming, huh? Nobody caught that. All right. You're all fired.
Well, I do think, going back and watching, I think the opposing team was completely dismantled except for Anna McMahon. So there is a possibility that nobody did see him coming. But was he hiking in the mountains nearby? Like,
that's where his path led him, right?
Exactly.
He was on a trail and led right there. What a coincidence. When it comes to Dembe, I've really, really enjoyed the scope of his arc. He's really gotten a lot more to do this year. And especially tapping into his religion and his humanity has been a nice little additive. And especially him finding, because that's the one thing that I felt has always kind of lacked with the Dembe character, is he always felt like more of an arm piece to Red as opposed to his own character in many respects, because he's just there to do Red's bidding. I really, really like that he went and did his own thing and found his own way.
And maybe that growth of the Dembe character this season is also what contributed to less time for Aram, potentially.
Probably. I mean, that happens. Anytime anybody else gets screen time, somebody else is going to get less. I get that. That's why I say don't fill Samar's spot.
Yeah.
On the same token, you don't want a show where it's just like a bunch of dudes and one woman. So, I mean, I understand if you want to have some more of a female presence, but supporting role. More Panabaker. There you go. Bam.
For sure. Yeah, Panabaker was great. I love Panabaker.
Well, we'll take her anytime we can get her. She's always a fun character to have.
I said I'd get you 2 minutes, but I didn't agree to this.
Especially on rewatch, I'm like, this feels like a big stretch, but okay, I'll take it. There's a lot of swallowing in that one. I'm like,
Well, when he said, when Cooper was like, do you have friends in DHS? I'm like, maybe Panabaker and Red are actually in cahoots. Maybe that's his inside source.
Oh, that would be cool, huh?
That'd be a nice twist.
And back to Red real quick, the jail stuff was really, I feel like that could have been a lot more fun. I feel like we should have saw him interacting and manipulating the actual inner sanctum of the jail a little bit more. Could have been some fun.
Yeah, especially if you're talking about his, your country and your rules and your government. Like, it would be a great way for him to just cause havoc and mayhem. Like, this is why the system doesn't work. Like, you could do parallelisms, right? The whatever you're talking about in court, and then have the opposite of that happening in jail. I think would have been kind of fun.
Yeah. So overall, season as a whole.
I did a fun thing on the after party, so I think we'll put it on the podcast here. I said if I had to rank the seasons worst to first or first to worst or whatever you want to call it, best season to worst season. There you go. I ranked the seasons, and then I ranked just the finale episodes. Like, which finale was the best finale episode? So for me, I say season 3 was the best season. Season 1 was number 2. Season 5 was number 3. 6 lands at number 4. 2 lands at number 5. And 4 lands at number 6, because everybody knows how I feel about 4 seasons by now.
Yeah, but Kaplan was in 4.
So here's the thing. From a finale perspective.
Okay. All right.
From a season finale perspective, it's actually the exact reverse order. So number 4, Kaplan's death, best finale by far. Tom Connolly's death in season 2, second best. Season 6 is number 3 because of the Katarina reveal. Then season 5 because of the bones. Season 1 was like, it's Berlin. Who cares? And we'll see him next season. And then season 3 with the whole, like, I'm your father. Didn't believe it. Garbage.
Wow.
So, yeah. I mean, there you go. That's like the polar opposite spectrum. Like, I think the seasons are 3-1-5-6-2-4, and then the finales are 4-2-6-5-1-3. So, that's interesting analysis.
I would go, well, first season is my favorite season, because that's some of the best Blacklisters, honestly. So, I'll put that as number 1. 3, number 2... Then it would probably be 5, 4, 2, and 6. I would say 6 is probably my least favorite.
Oh, wow.
Sorry.
That's okay. And what about finales?
But least favorite doesn't mean that I didn't like it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's always that's why I don't like doing these things. It doesn't make it makes
sense. In terms of
finales,
like the 7 books in the Dark Tower series, one of them has to be worse than the others.
One of them has to be less great,
yeah,
or less good. That's the way I would prefer to put it, because I haven't disliked any season. Finale, I agree with 4. Then I would probably put, because that's the Kaplan one,
mm-hmm.
right? Kaplan. Then I would probably go Tom Connelly was two.
Mm-hmm.
I go Tom Connelly, so that's two. And then probably one.
The Berlin reveal.
I liked Berlin. I did. Five, six.
Katerina.
Nope, three and six. Nope, three and six. I'm going to say six because I really don't, I don't feel like six had the a strong enough hook throughout the episode
and,
as a whole.
And I think that they set up enough that you could believe that Katerina was coming. So it wasn't like, oh, it's Katerina. Holy crap.
Well, yeah, I should preface that. A big factor was that I was spoiled to that. So it didn't really ruin the episode for me, but when you watch it and you already know that, you really can take the episode as a whole, I feel like. And yeah, I would definitely, it felt more like a regular episode than it did a finale for much of the episode.
Especially because it was only like a 3 minute sequence, not even?
For Katerina?
Yeah.
What was it, 30 seconds?
It was longer than that.
I don't think so.
But I don't think it was like a full 10 minutes. No. It was short.
By the way, a big tip. Next time you're filming a super secret cameo, do it indoors, because then it might not get...
I'm back and film from a third story apartment.
Yeah. Somebody, I mean, because there's a-holes on every corner, so they're always looking for that scoop. But I'm really excited for what that brings, because to me, you know, while some people are very upset because they have personal theories and stakes in the game and they might have to come to a conclusion, I understand that. But on the flip side, look at all the story opportunities and potential that opens up, because we don't know what this means. We don't know what this means for Red, for the task force, or anybody else, but it definitely means the mythology is expanding and also narrowing. So we're getting more with Katerina in the picture. We get more of the scope of the actual story, and we can start to bring that, because it is time. It's time to start bringing that mythology in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was time for this to happen. It needed to happen. Absolutely. We've talked about it all year, and it finally happened, and now people don't want to accept it for a large, a very distinct portion.
So, with that being said, then, what are your predictions for season 7? What do you want to see happen? What are your expectations?
See, I don't like to have too many expectations, because then you're always
disappointed.
You get disappointed. Yeah, I don't want that. I'll go with prediction, because I don't want an expectation. I really don't want to have any expectation.
Sure.
Based on what I've read or what I've seen, I really feel like Katerina is going to be, I don't think she's going to be a ever-present presence right away, but more of an ever-growing presence. So everything that happened on that street and why it happened on that street, I don't feel like we're going to get an answer to that probably until maybe mid-season. So Katerina, I can't even predict like what the situation is. I really don't have any ideas yet. I don't think Red is in danger though. I really don't.
You don't think he's in danger?
I do not, because it was a needle. He was put unconscious. He was taken in the van.
And she kept the hat versus throwing it in the garbage.
She kept him. She caught him. You know, she didn't just let him plop. So yeah, no, I don't think he's in any danger.
Okay. Are you ready?
Sure.
This is the plot twist.
Oh, boy.
So I think it comes down to the end of the season, and Liz finally meets Katerina face-to-face in the present version of Katerina.
Mm-hmm.
And Liz has to make the decision of Katerina versus Red. And some like, whether it's a standoff or whatever, but some decision, and Katerina ends up dying by Liz's hand.
Oh, wow. That's a bold decision.
She makes the choice to choose Red over Katerina.
Interesting.
And then you find out that Red is Katerina and she made the right choice.
Oh my God.
Back on the train, baby.
Is that last part a joke?
That's a plot twist.
No, that's not a plot twist. That's bad writing.
You could take it at face value. But it is the blacklist, so...
No, that was just planted there for people like you. So, yeah, okay, I'm with you up until you got dumb.
I think it'll be a Liz versus Kat versus Red triangle showdown.
That would be really fun. I would watch the hell out of that. That would be fun.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking right now.
I like that. They're probably going to go a completely different way. I mean, that's how predictions are, right?
But they should. because if they listen to me, show would be really bad.
I'm glad you finally admit it. I'm glad you finally came around understanding it. All right, we're going to wrap this up. I feel like we've covered just about everything we can cover, and we're going to have a very, very special guest coming up soon. So be sure to subscribe if you haven't already. And we do want to take a quick second to say thank you to those of you that are supporting the show by going to Patreon. That's Patreon. Patreon.com/TheBlacklistGSM. Remember, if you love the After Party, which you can watch on Patreon, all you need to do is ensure we get to 1,000 a month in support. We will then do the show live on camera. You can look at our ugly faces, all of them, not just the special ones.
Because believe me, if you would have seen the facial expressions that we've had during the recording of this episode.
I got very animated. You get to see all the reaction.
Yeah, how high up Aaron's hand went above his head. Every bit of support helps, and we're excited that Doug is an official blacklister. In addition, want to say thanks to Syndicate members Marilyn and Lacey. Also, Task Force members Anja, Leone, Brandon, Jim, Lorelei, Carol, Stacy, and Florian. They all receive special Blacklist Exposed t-shirts. They are all delivered at this point. If you have not received it yet this week, they'll be there next week. But by June 1st, all t-shirts should be delivered. So if you want a t-shirt, just donate at the $20 a month level, and you can get one for yourself.
Also, shout out to Kathy, Jane, Michelle, Sherry, Lisa, Kevin, Paulette, Priscilla, Isabel, Richard, Nell, James, Judy, Rachel, Tony, and Sharon for being amazing special agents for supporting us and the podcast.
If we get 200 people to give $5, that's a lot of names we're going to have to read.
I'll just let you handle most of that. I'll be like, thanks, Troy.
All right, make it happen. So Aaron has to take like large breaths. 3 months, people. 3 months before the show comes back, and you can go ahead and do that at Patreon, patreon.com/TheBlacklistGSM. Fill the fedora, get some awesome rewards for yourself, and let's see if we can make this thing a live video show for season 7.
Yeah, and if it's live, maybe I'll give myself a hormone injection. Well, let's just see what happens. Don't forget, we'll have John Bokerkamp here very, very soon, so come back for that. Well, that's going to conclude this episode. Be sure to follow us on Twitter this offseason at TheBlacklistGSM. Subscribe to the show if you are not already on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Spotify, Pandora, if it's in the U.S., iHeartRadio, Radio.com, or from your favorite podcast player of choice. And don't forget, get all the case profiles waiting for you at TheBlacklistExposed.com. Also want to mention, Troy and I do another show called Beyond Westworld. That's for the show Westworld, HBO's Westworld, which we just saw the trailer for. Looks like it's going to be fantastic. Get caught up if you haven't seen it already.
Yes, yes. BeyondWestworldPodcast.com, or just look for the Beyond Westworld logo on the Golden Spiral Media website. Don't forget to follow us on Tumblr, Instagram, and join the Facebook group as well. Just search for The Blacklist Exposed. Talk about the show, the podcast, and be kind to each other.
Big thanks for listening. Don't forget to submit your questions for John Bokenkamp by emailing them into feedback@goldensparrowmedia.com. Tweet them to us at TheBlacklistGSM or leave a comment on this post at TheBlacklistExposed.com. We will pick several to ask John.
We expect the show to return September 27th, Friday at 8 Eastern Pacific, 7 Central on NBC in the States. And we'll have our podcast out that weekend, much like we did this year. Until then, keep it classy, Blacklist fans. One community we are. United we stand, divided, and we don't get a season 8. Debate, but do it respectfully. If Red and Wrestler can be civil, given what Donald knows after all these years, I think we can all do the same. We'll see you soon.
Have a great summer.
Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at 5Popcorn. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the Blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.